This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the July 29th, 2019 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today with Bob Braunstein. Bob is a federal benefits specialist with NITP, retired Fed, all-around good person. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Bob. Good to be here.
All righty. Now, this is where I decouple. So I'll announce what we're going to talk about, and then for the rest of the show, I'll be listening. So today's show is dedicated to special retirement and benefits for federal employees. In the, did we call them Leos?
Yes. I used to think that was a sign of the Zodiac, but it's also a law enforcement officer.
Okay. Now, as I understand it, I've been around Bob for a significant number of years, and I kind of sort of understood Leos, but I never understood they're everywhere.
They are. Many, many different federal agencies.
So it's not just the ones that you would think would be law enforcement. So it might be, I remember once at, I'll not say the agency, but I just, it's the last thing I think that they would be in there, and they were in there.
Oh, yeah. We've been having them in the Office of Inspector General in many, many different agencies. But it's this particular special occupational category retirement we're going to talk about today doesn't include just law enforcement. It also includes air traffic controllers and firefighters. And these are folks who are actually subject to mandatory retirement, two categories. The firefighters and law enforcement officers must retire in most situations by 57 years of age, and air traffic controllers at age 56. These jobs are exceptionally stressful. Many of them have major physical requirements, and it's essential that the government keep the workforce young. So they set up mandatory retirement, which means I'm not going to be around as long, so what are you going to do for me in the way of benefits? I mean, what is my package going to look like? Because everybody else can stick around, and their package could be bigger.
And so it'd be the package of benefits because they're going out. They can't necessarily do the 30 years in their job status, if you will. They
That's
might
correct.
Be able to do 20 there and 10 somewhere else. But and it makes sense. Air traffic controllers, law enforcement, high stress.
Very high stress. Air traffic controllers might be the highest stress in the world. Law enforcement, 24/7, they're chasing the bad guys, doing all that stuff. Many of them move into management positions, but it's still very essential that the workforce remain vigorous in all of these jobs. So there is a special type of retirement that's given to them. They can retire earlier. They have enhanced formulas. There are different rules associated with cost of living adjustments. There's something called an annuity supplement in FERS, which they get earlier. And there's a work income test that doesn't apply to that until later. So these are the kinds of things that I think we can get some traction on and talk about today.
I've been doing this a while.
Yeah.
And there's one seminar that will never be anything else but number one with regards to the number of questions. And they weren't, if you add two and two together, is it six or four? These were, tough questions. And I walked out with the coordinator after it was over, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But I said, what's with that? And they go, all their life, they've been trying to outfox the drug dealers. Now, the drug dealers have been replaced by financial issues and the IRS. Not that anyone would cheat. And trust me, it wasn't that. But they just didn't know because they were kind of in this isolated environment.
Sure.
And I'll never forget that. Then I understood.
Yep.
So you've been there and done it.
Yes. Matter of fact, I spent 9 years in the Human Resources Department of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And back in those days, they were under Treasury, and now they're under Justice. And I gained a fairly strong understanding of the criteria and requirements of not only what the jobs are and what they went through, but I also became skilled in a special retirement category known as 8336C.
Oh, that
the code.
One.
That one, all right. 6C retirement is what it's called, abbreviated. And it basically lets people in these job categories retire as early as 50 with 20 years of service, or now you can retire with 25 years of service across all categories, as long as you're at any age. used to be a little bit different under the old plan for law enforcement. So you can leave pretty early, and many of them are leaving at 50 or in their late 40s when they're still viable as far as working. People work way beyond those ages now. Many people work until they're Social Security eligible. So it's important that the retirement system recognize that early out and compensate accordingly by a richer formula and no age reductions for leaving early, like the regular formula does for other employees.
Okay, and now are they knowledgeable about this at retirement? I mean, they have high-stress jobs, so they just might not pay attention to the benefits, but they know they're there.
They should be. I would think one of the draws in the recruitment literature is that, number one, you come on board and you have a career track. Law enforcement officers actually, because of the 24/7 nature of their occupation, get extra basic pay. It's called law enforcement availability pay, which will actually boost their basic pay by up to 25% more. And this doesn't even include the locality pay they get for the area that they're in. So when something called the high three average salary is figured, which is your highest three consecutive earning years, a major component of a retirement formula, unlike regular employees who are pretty much limited by their basic pay and locality pay in the high three, the law enforcement folks and firefighters get extra pay for the 24/7 nature of the work that they do, and it adds to their base, gives them a bigger formula just on that basis.
Now, you mentioned something about consecutive years. So let's say somebody comes and they go into a non-Leo environment and they come back for 2 years, but they wouldn't get the high three, you couldn't do the high three because there was a gap in that.
Yeah, let me mention one thing too about the non-Leo environment. There is a requirement among law enforcement officers that they do 20 consecutive years in their occupation. Wow. They leave it, they have to come back and reestablish primary eligibility. But what it boils down to is for example, criminal investigators generally start their careers as street agents, and they spend time going up the promotion ladder, and then they eventually bridge into management positions, but they're immediately consecutive. They're called secondary positions. Once they have their 20 years in, they technically could go to another occupation and still retire under the special law enforcement rules. But I think what you were talking about is if, let's say, for example, I spent my entire working career in, let's use San Francisco, which is one of the highest locality areas in the country. And then just prior to retiring, 2 or 3 years before I go, I'm at the same grade, but I get an assignment in a field office, for example, that's outside my hometown, which is near Kansas City. Now, Kansas City has locality pay, but it's nothing anywhere close to what San Francisco gets. So these folks spend their last 3 years there, but I guess Tony Bennett would say not only did they leave their hearts in San Francisco, I would say they left their high three there too, because the locality pay is so much richer in that other area. So it's three consecutive years, but it doesn't have to be the last three. It usually is, but it doesn't have to be.
Okay. All righty. So when you talk to groups, are they aware of the special treatment that they're entitled to?
Generally, they are. When I, you put me into lots of seminars at NITP, and oftentimes we have a purely law enforcement audience. And they're all aware of the fact that they have to have their 20 years qualified. Firefighters similarly have to have 20 years. Air traffic controllers do too. And after they're qualified with their 20 years, if they happen to be 50 years of age, they can retire. And just to get a little bit into the weeds on formulas, generally in FERS, if you're not law enforcement, you have to reach what's called minimum retirement age. And depending upon when you were born, that's somewhere between 56 and 57 years of age. To retire without an age reduction, you need 30 years of creditable service. Law enforcement officers, conversely, because of the mandatory nature of when they must leave, are at their earliest retirement age, no age reduction, at 50 as long as they have 20 years of service, 25 years any age. Typically, the FERS employee who retires at 57 with 30 years of service, when you look at the high three average salary, What's multiplied times the high three is a percentage for every year they worked. So they get 30% of their $100,000 high three if they're in Washington, $30,000 a year. The law enforcement folks get an extra bump for the first 20 years. Each of those years count at 1.7%. So for 20 years, they get 34% as opposed to a regular FERS employee who only get 20%. And they could retire at 60 with that, but they only get 20% of the high three. All other years are at 1%. So there's an enriched formula which gives them, you know, roughly what they would have gotten had they been able to stay the course and stick around until 57 and beyond. But they have to usually leave by 57. So okay. It's an enhanced benefit.
So here goes the would-be creative mind. Let's say that I was not in a law enforcement environment, but I have 17 years, and I can go over to become a Leo for three. Is that possible?
So in other words,
be treated as a Leo?
If you leave a law enforcement job and go directly to another covered law enforcement job, you're okay. But if perchance you departed at 17 years and went into a non-law enforcement occupational field, you would have to come back to law enforcement and reestablish your primary eligibility, which might mean having to go back to being, like I used before, a street agent. It's got to be continuous.
But if I worked 17 years in anything but a law enforcement environment, and then I joined a law enforcement, and I then met the three-year test, do I still get the 20-year special deal?
Well, it's not the three-year test. It's 20 years. And the problem is if you spent 17 years as a management analyst and you're now 46 years old or whatever the case might be, or let's just say you're 42 years of age, you probably wouldn't be able to bridge into a law enforcement position because they've got to do 20 years to get special law enforcement retirement.
I can't help myself.
You got to be hired by 37.
I got it.
Usually. There are exceptions, but you have to be hired by 37.
Okay, and in your interworkings with law enforcement groups as well as law enforcement agents, what have you found, no disrespect, what they didn't know that surprised you? Because their focus oftentimes is on the bad person or getting here, and they might not always fully appreciate all the subtleties in with regards to retirement and building one's nest egg, if you will. So is there something overall you could say, not everybody, but more often than what you might think?
There's oftentimes a revelation with respect to the annuity supplement in FERS. Just to give you an idea of what that is, if you retire before you're 62, the Office of Personnel Management will give you additional money in your check, your retirement check, based on a projected age 62 Social Security amount that you're too young to get. They essentially add up all your civilian years, divide it by 40, which is what they consider to be a full working career, and you get that percentage of that age 62 projected amount. Now, FERS employees who are not law enforcement are eligible for this at 57 or so with 30 years. Law enforcement folks are eligible for it right away when they retire at 50 with, say, 20 years. This particular extra money for regular employees is immediately subject to a work earnings test, much like early drawn Social Security. You can't do that much work and keep getting the benefit. About $17,000 is about it, and then it starts to winnow away. In the law enforcement community, they're surprised in many situations to learn that, okay, if I leave at 50 with 20 years of service and I'll get my chunk of change, which is the FERS annuity supplement, that's not going to be subject to any work earnings examination until I hit the regular FERS minimum retirement age of 57. So they get that extra money in their check, and it's not work income examined for 6, 7, 8 years sometimes, depending upon when they retire. So that's a revelation.
When you deal with these fine people, do you find that they didn't know some of these, I won't call them subtleties, they're major benefits? Are they unaware?
It's a question of how close they are to getting ready to retire and whether they've attended a retirement seminar or not. If I'm in a mid-career class, sometimes there isn't as much knowledge about this, but the folks who are getting ready to go are usually pretty well-versed in what's going on.
Okay, well, why don't we take a break there? Well versed in what's going on.
Yeah.
And we'll listen to the sponsor of the show, WAIPA, and they're going to explain what's going on in the life insurance arena.
You have life insurance to protect the people you love. As a civilian federal employee, you have two choices designed specifically for you, WEPA and Fegley. The big difference? Price. Chances are WEPA premiums will cost you less. In fact, the average WEPA member saves $375 per year on premiums. Prioritize your peace of mind with a life insurance policy designed for feds by feds. If you're a civilian federal employee interested in comparing WEPA to Fegley, visit waepa.org today. WEPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit presented by NITP Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Network 1500 a.m. WEPA has been ensuring the future of federal workers for more than 75 years. See why over 46,000 feds have already switched to WEPA at waepa.org.
Okay, welcome back to 4-Year Benefit. We're here with Bob Braunstein. Sorry, we got so carried away at the break that Andrew had to remind us you're back on the air. So the beginning part, very good, but you asked me this. Excuse me, I asked you this at the break. Once you have 20 years as a Leo, but you still want to work, can you segue over to a non-Leo position?
You can do that. You can do that from pretty much, well, from firefighter positions as well, and move into other positions and eventually retire under the special Leo rules. So, for example, if I didn't want to leave at 57, let's just say I went into another area of my agency, still involved in the enforcement activities, but I was more of an analyst or on the administrative side, not subject to mandatory retirement. I could stick around well past 57, work as long as I want. But I always have a fallback because I've qualified for law enforcement retirement. So if I decide to throw in the towel, as long as when I'm leaving, I have at least 20 years of service and I'm at least 50, or if I have 25 years, it doesn't matter, 20 of which are in those law enforcement fields, I could retire at any time. But typically, law enforcement folks must leave at 57. Agency heads have the authority to grant dispensations to keep people on till 60. And sometimes the talent pool, you know, will pull someone in who's beyond the age of 37, whose skill set is so unique and needed that they will give that person a dispensation to do their 20 years. You know, you hire me at 42, I can't get the 20 until I'm 62, so we'll let you stay until 62. That requires, you know, moving mountains to do, but every now and then that's the case. But the flexibility is there. Once you have your 20, you can pretty much go to another job and retire under the law enforcement provisions from any job.
Okay, and you teach this, and I think I asked you this before, but I just want to make sure. Do you find that in the classes you teach and or the calls you get after class that there are things that you thought they would know but they didn't?
Again, the biggest revelation is the first supplement income test. Some don't realize that they are immediately eligible for cost of living adjustments. Now, what is a COLA? A COLA, once you're retired, is an increase to your retired pay based on what happens to the consumer price index, which you being the financial person know is a market basket of goods and services across health, housing, food, fuel, you know, primary, you know, I guess what you call benchmark goods and services. And for most people in the FERS retirement plan, these are people outside of these special categories, they don't become COLA eligible even when they retire at, say, 57 until the year of their 62nd birthday. Now, Leos, firefighters, air traffic controllers, the mandatory retirement groups, are immediately COLA eligible. In other words, they retire and they're eligible for that first COLA that comes up at the end of the year, you know, for the length of time they've been retired. It might be prorated that first year. And there are unique rules associated with the first COLA that we don't have time to go into. But the COLA eligibility is different. And this is sometimes a revelation, particularly in mid-career classes. I didn't know that. Wow. And some folks aren't even aware of the fact that, wow, I could go to another job and still, once I've met the basic criteria of my 20 years, I could retire later from another position, still garnering the benefits of law enforcement. So that's kind of unique, and it turns on light bulbs, particularly in mid-career classes.
Yeah, interesting on the tax side of life. Prior to the change in the law last year, there was an area where you could claim, they called it miscellaneous itemized deductions. and it had to exceed a certain percent of your income. But I don't want to bore people with this. And there it would be uniform maintenance. The maintenance might be taking in, taking out. It could be, you know, starch uniforms. I doubt there's a ton of those left. But it would also be special things that they needed to buy on the job, but they weren't provided on the job. Well, that's gone because they obliterated those. So now there is one for Leos with regards to their annuity. Let's say their annuity is X. You know, the what do you call that again? The high three? All right.
High three.
Okay, the high three.
Percentages for each year of service.
All righty, thank you. So that's X dollars. And if there's a small tax deduction based on the amount of money that was withheld from them over the period of time. But there's a special one for law enforcement officers that allows them to deduct up to $3,000 of their health insurance right off the top. And it's just amazing on the return. You write L-E-O next to the number, or your computer software puts it in there. But I'm always not shocked but surprised at the people that are totally unaware of it.
You know, I know about that because my wife is a retired ATF agent, and I've been under her health insurance for years because since we both retired, we get that $3,000 reduction. It's a combination of premiums for health insurance and long-term care, as long as it's coming out of what, your OPM check?
Right. And the health insurance usually covers it. But if there was the long-term care and they were, you know, maybe they're young, so that the premiums aren't as high, but then the long-term care, if they took it, would be in there as well.
That's great. Because you lose pre-tax benefits when you retire. Typically, when you're working, you pay your health insurance, dental and vision. You have flexible spending accounts, too, and those are all paid with pre-tax dollars. But in retirement, all of that goes away.
We both teach. You teach one subject that I don't know anything about, federal benefits, and I teach tax that nobody knows anything about. But one of the things that we talk about in class is there's a high probability, but there's a probability that there's going to be a second career in their life when they retire because they retire so young. Now, the truth of the matter is, there was a lot of boots on the ground and a lot of stress, so they're not all running out for a high-stress job. But sometimes they're an ideal candidate to be hired in the private sector, if you will, because they have a discipline that – I'm not saying anything bad about the private sector, but they have a discipline almost quasi-military. You know, they're dedicated to the job, but they also have these really nice benefits that the new employer doesn't have to pay for. So instead, when you're interviewing, try to monetize that, whatever monetize me. In other words, give me more because you don't have to cover me under health insurance. You don't have to cover me under this, that, or another thing. And some of the feedback I get back, some companies go, do you want the job or do you not? Others would say, really? And some of the employers don't. They're probably going to be a smaller employer. Mm-hmm. But again, this is a side benefit.
It absolutely works, too. I've walked that talk. I've got a signing bonus in one place that gave me a little extra because they didn't have to pay my health insurance. Another organization gave me more vacation time and actually got a little bit of higher pay. These were employer-employee relationships, though. You know, I mean, most of the work that I do now is a contractor, you know, which brings up another interesting question that I get from time to time. And I'm sure you've heard this, too. You know, what would be the consequences if I came back to work for the government? You know, this is not just for the law enforcement, firefighters, and air traffic controllers, but I do get asked that question. And in typical situations, exceptions there are, but in typical situations, when you come back to work having retired, you're characterized as a reemployed annuitant because mm-hmm. you're getting an annuity from OPM. And in most situations, not all, but in most, your salary in your federal job, being that you're an employee again, is offset by the pension you're getting from OPM. And so that means for the $100,000 job that I just signed up for, my $40,000 pension is going to reduce it to $60,000 of income. Is it really worth doing that? And sometimes it is. There are benefits associated with working longer because you get supplemental checks. Work 5 years like that, you wind up getting a redetermined annuity, different high three. But I always found for myself that what you suggested, you know, being a contractor, being able to monetize, if you will, the benefits that you have and not having to worry about having your salary deducted by your annuity. The best way to do that is to not work directly for the government.
Well, as a contractor for the government or a contractor for a company.
Absolutely.
They generally would like people to be contractors, all things considered. Sometimes it just can't be based on hours worked and supervision, et cetera. The employer doesn't have to pay the FICA and the Medicare health benefits and the like, which then the individual hopefully can negotiate a higher hourly rate. But once they get paid whatever they get paid, because they're self-employed, they have a lot of deductions that they couldn't claim if they were an employee. And that might be health care. That might be, of course they're going to have that, but it might be certain tools, if you will, for the profession. If they did it, they could deduct it because now it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
And albeit it's a small business, and it's, you know, focused on dollars in and expenses out. And it might be professional education, dues and subscriptions. I don't think people should travel to the other side of the country just to go to a seminar to get the write-off. There ought to be other reasons to go, and you could deduct the business portion of it. So there's some nice there. But whatever those nice tax deductions are have to be outweighed by or not outweighed by the loss of benefits that they would get for nothing.
Now, these are business deductions. These are not things that are itemized on the itemized deductions.
No, those are gone.
Pretty much. New
law just obliterated that. And this is for anybody, whether it's Leos or whether it's non-Leos. Provision office in the home is a common one that used to show up on miscellaneous itemized deductions as an unreimbursed employee expense.
Hmm.
Why, I telecommute, and my employer tells me I can do this. So the nicest room in my house is my office in the home. It's amazing how many TVs are in there, and it's amazing how many things are on the wall. And it's only 10 by 10. But That's if you're self-employed. If you're an employee, it's not going to happen.
I was going to ask you that because I'm self-employed and I'm still claiming that. That's okay, right?
You're fine as long as on that thing, the form called a Schedule C.
Yes.
Or some people might incorporate their business and it's reported elsewhere. The heart of the matter is wherever you report it, if you're self-employed, it's a cost of doing business.
I just had a question for you, though. I mean, given that we're talking about law enforcement, air traffic controllers, firefighters, are any of your clients in these categories? Do you advise any of these folks financially?
I stay away from finance. I can do the tax.
Taxes. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I'm a tax guy. I understand finance, but I determined many years ago when I was half the age now, even more so than that, I never wanted to be in a position where I advise somebody to invest in something and it didn't work out. And I'm not saying that the financial planners are callous in that regard, but they knew a lot more about financial planning than I did at the time. So I decided, no, I can do taxes because taxes, they're generally, there's a hard yin and a yang. But there's some out. You can go outside the box but not be in any violation of any tax law. lawsuit or something like that. You can give aggressive advice, but not crazy aggressive advice.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as we're talking about taxes, there's a slightly different situation with respect to TSP withdrawals, thrift savings plan withdrawals, for these occupational categories as well. Now, you can probably tell me a heck of a lot more than I know about the Modernization Act and all of the bells and whistles that TSP is now adding to give people more flexibility to pull money out. But the law enforcement, firefighter, and air traffic controller community, because of the fact that they have mandatory retirement and could leave as early as 50, my understanding, they can actually tap into their TSP in what's soon to be the expanded way they can do that,
mm-hmm.
As long as they're doing it in the year that they turn 50 years of age.
Exactly.
Right. Which is amazing because what is a traditional IRA for people? Most people have to wait till they're 59 and a half.
And you're absolutely right, but I think the law was because they retire so early and not everybody goes to a second career, but if they did, there ought to be some recognition of the boots on the ground in the prior 20.
So let me put myself into a young firefighter, air traffic controller, law enforcement person. Say I'm leaving. I'm around 50-ish. I've got my 20 years in. I'm going out onto this special retirement, and I can't get any Social Security, but I'm getting my supplement from OPM, and that's not going to be income tested for a while. I've got my pension. And now I'm looking at TSP, and I have all of these new bells and whistles. I'm going to you as a tax advisor to ask you a question like, all right, is it a good idea if I start a payment stream? And if I do, you know, how often can I change it? Is it a good idea to change it? Is it a good idea to take more than one partial withdrawal? I mean, what kind of advice would you be giving me?
Well, if I absolutely need it, I take it. In other words, if I can, now again, not everybody goes to a full-time second career, but they might work part-time, they got this annuity, etc. Do I really need a distribution from the thrift? And especially at a young age, and you and I actually have had this discussion before, do I take it now or do I take it later? My feeling, as well as yours, I believe, was take it later when I have to take it. Mm-hmm. Now, some people would say, well, I can't wait to 70 and a half. I need it now, or I want to enjoy myself. But with regards to the thrift, with regards to an IRA, or if they went into business, they could set up still another retirement plan with very rich contribution issues. I want to enjoy some of that. Fine. Take out some fun money, and maybe it'll be replenished by working more. I don't know. But if you really want to reward yourself for all those years, take some out. Now, I'm no money shrink by any stretch, but I understand that. It's the ones that maybe start early and don't back off. You know, I want to buy the thing I never had before.
From your professional perspective, Bob, aren't there risks associated with having more bennies and opportunities to do withdrawals than it used to be pretty restrictive? And obviously, they kept administrative costs low for that reason. But when you give people more responsibility, or I should say more opportunities, with that comes much greater responsibility to manage the money to make sure you don't outlive it.
Without question, and whoever we're talking to, whether it's D.C., metro area, Maryland, Virginia, D.C., or whether we're talking to somebody on the other coast or anything in between, they do have financial experts. They oftentimes, and they probably should, be called certified financial planners. Now, you might find somebody that has a dual role. They all understand benefits and they understand finance. They might not have a CFP next to their name, but they understand the federal retiree. I go outside of my world, you know, I get lost. I'm a tax guy. And if anybody knows me, they'll know me now. I'm not a great financial planner. So I seek others' advices, and I fortunately work with the best of the best that know not only the finance, but the benefits and Social Security, the legal people, the shrinks, the retirement shrinks now.
So you are believing the adage, physician heal thyself. You don't really do that. You're looking for other folks.
Personally, I just have too many other things to focus on. I understand the dynamics of it, but I don't understand it well enough to say, I suggest you do this. Tax-wise, I can do that.
Yeah. I thought it might be interesting today to share with our listening audience just how many people are in these occupations. I pulled some factoids, off of the internet. It's interesting to note that there are about 120,000 full-time law enforcement officers in the government. And, we think of them as being FBI, ATF, but you've got so many other organizations. You've got Bureau of Prisons, Drug Enforcement, Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Department of Homeland Security, and then other organizations that have law enforcement officers, Office of Inspector General. There are types of positions that sometimes people think are in law enforcement, but transportation security officers technically aren't. They have badges, but they don't have arrest authority, an enforcement authority. Customs immigration inspectors, ATF used to have ATF inspectors, but I thought that was rather remarkable that there are that many people. 120,000.
Why don't we do this? Let's take a break. And NITP is not sponsors the show, but we produce the show every week with good folks like Bob. And listen to what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here with Bob Ronstein today. He's a federal benefits specialist, a retired Fed, but in particular, he really knows the law enforcement community issues.
I do.
And I asked Bob if I could lead with this. Years ago, I did a seminar. Now, I'm a tax guy, all right? I'm not talking about anything but taxes. And it was, I won't name the agency, but it was a law enforcement agency. And it is the toughest seminar I've ever done and maybe ever will done. Not that they were belligerent, not that they were nasty, but the questions did not stop. And I walked out with the training officer and I walked down the hall and I said, this was really fun, but where do these questions come from? And the response was, all their life, they've been trying to beat the bad guys. Now their focus is on IRS. Not that the IRS is bad, but they know there's so many laws and they don't want to break them, but they also don't want to leave anything behind. And as we just mentioned, there are some things that they get that others don't. And sometimes even today when we do a law enforcement seminar, sometimes they're unaware of that health insurance as a retiree. Anyway, so they've focused on what they do, and sometimes they're not aware of the special things that they would get retiring early, and also because of their MOS.
It's true. Before we went to break, and I want to give equal time to the other occupational categories who might be listening in, the firefighter community, the USDA's Forest Service actually employs 10,000 wildland firefighters. These are the folks that go out and do the forest fires. And many of them deal with structural fires, too, but a lot of them, most of it is out, you know, in the wildlands, for lack of a better term. And there are numerous firefighters, 7,500, I believe, or more, in the Department of Interior's National Park Service. I couldn't believe it. There are firefighters in the Fish and Wildlife Service. I mean, you think there's a lot of water there, you wouldn't worry about fires, but they do. Bureau of Land Management and Bureau of Indian Affairs also has firefighters. And not covered by federal retirement, you've got all branches of the military that employ firefighters. And they're actually in the military. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Air traffic controllers. This was amazing, some of these stats. 14,000 air traffic controllers manage traffic through about 700 different FAA monitored facilities, airports. And they deal with 87,000 takeoffs and landings per day.
Is that the highest stress job there is?
I think it is, based on everything that I've read. I mean, they're on for a few hours and then off. And you and I have a personal friend, shout out to Billy, who's an former air traffic controller. And it takes some amazing guts and willpower to be able to do a job like that. It's really, really tough work. It's 3 or 4 year almost apprenticeship once you're on before you're fully, you know, allowed to fly on your own, for lack of a better term. But it's very, very stressful, which is why they have to go out at 56. Among the three, they actually retire a year earlier. They could get a special dispensation from the agency, had to work until 61. But by and large, they want to keep that workforce as young as possible because that's very, very high stress. Can you imagine? 64 million takeoffs and landings a year are handled by the air traffic controllers in the U.S.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're monitoring flights at all times. I don't know how they do it. I was never cut out for that kind of work, but it's It's an amazingly stressful job, and that, therefore it falls under the special retirement criteria.
Okay, and the others probably we don't even know about, right?
They're for sure. The
job categories, MOSs, call it what you want, which is you don't know. You kind of know what agency, if you're there, you know what they do, but some are more in harm's way than others. Mm-hmm. And then some of the I remember once, I think I can say this, I was talking to somebody, and they were a diplomatic pouch carrier.
Wow, is that law enforcement?
They were under the law. Correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, but they were law enforcement.
So did they have a handcuff, and that was the briefcase?
I didn't go any further than that because I knew if I asked a question, they were going to say none of your business.
I wanted to bring it back again to the formulas. I mean, we still actually have two primary retirement groups. There's still some CSRS people left around, Civil Service Retirement System. And we have people in FERS. The majority of the folks are in FERS. The enhanced benefit, which we already talked about, let me repeat, for FERS, is that once for your first 20 years in these categories, the multiplier times the high three average is 1.7%, as opposed to 1%, or in some cases 1.1, right? For CSRS people, they have a very different formula. But for the first 20, which is never more than 2% per year for most people, for up time, 2% per year times the high three. But the law enforcement folks, because they have the same mandatory retirement, get 2.5% for each of the first 20 years, which gives them 50% of their high three when they go out at 50. So that's the enhanced benefit there. Now, they don't get annuity supplements. They're not covered by Social Security. A lot of things they don't get. They aren't matching TSP either. But those formulas are unique to these occupational categories. Again, not too many left in CSRS. Primarily, we have a FERS audience, and they'll get 34% times the high three for the first 20 years and 1% for every year thereafter. So if you work 30 years, you're looking at 44% times your high three, and that's only one leg of your income. You get a supplement, you eventually get Social Security, and then you get TSP that you can draw down, which hopefully if you've managed it well, that could make for an extremely robust retirement.
Bob, I'm sitting here, and let me shift gears, and I'm going to be Leo, and you're going to be you. Mm-hmm. And I come up, and I say, listen, I'm approaching 57. I really like working. I really like my job. I understand it's going to take a toll on me. But I don't want to be shown the door effectively. What can I do? I don't think I can write a letter to the president and get a special exception. What can I do? Is there a parallel world that if I could stay working, I might not be doing what I do, but I'm still involved with law enforcement to some degree?
Well, you have two options, the first of which is probably a heavy lift. But your agency head does have the ability, if your skills are still required, to give you a dispensation to stick around until you're 60. So you could do that and stay in the law enforcement profession. The other opportunity, which is if you do have skills that meet the criteria of the job, related to what you're doing but not subject to mandatory retirement, would be to do a reassignment and work in another area related to but not part of the law enforcement criteria as far as mandatory separation. And then you can basically work as long as you like and still have the opportunity to retire under the law enforcement provisions because you've accumulated those 20 years and you meet the criteria. And the same thing holds true for the firefighters.
Okay. And all your years of doing this, mm-hmm. What were you most maybe surprised or the top two or three surprises of questions that were asked that you just figure, gee, didn't somebody tell you that?
The biggest one that continues to hit me, and it's pretty well advertised, is I think the misbegotten notion that you got to wait till 59 and a half to pull money out of TSP. And that's across all retirement categories. People don't realize that, even if you're in regular occupations not subject to mandatory retirement, as long as you're at least 55 in the year that you separate, ba-doom, you get it. Without penalties, that's the big one. I'm trying to think of not too many other things. I just don't have that many to enumerate. I mean, most it seems that most of the folks have a general knowledge of what's going on, and they're coming to our seminars to either cement or reaffirm that knowledge. That's the big one is TSP.
Yeah. And they, like you say, they'll have that. Now, we, of course, when we do a seminar, we spend one whole day on benefits. And
right.
It might be a half day on financial planning or a full day or a half day on tax and legal and health. I'm not trying to do a commercial here.
Yeah, and you know, now that you mentioned health, the other big revelation that I get, and this could take up an entire show, is people understanding when they're eligible for Medicare. I mean, there are many people who work beyond 65 years of age and are still getting health insurance through their employment. Those folks are not Medicare eligible, and if they sign up for it, it's not going to pay anything. You just pay extra premiums for something that Medicare won't handle. Medicare is designed to be the primary payer, and it isn't until you're 65 and no longer getting health insurance through a job. And the other thing that they don't know, and they're really blown away by, is that the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program does not mandate Medicare enrollment, particularly in Part B, which, as you know, carries a pretty hefty means-tested premium, which could be as much as $460 a month per person. So that's a big revelation for them. Number one, you know, if I'm still working and getting my health insurance through this job and I'm 65, 66, or I'm retired and I'm 75 but my younger spouse is working and my health insurance is under her actively working, I'm not Medicare eligible. So I don't sign up until that work-based health insurance ends. That's always a big revelation for folks. And then just purely the fact that they don't have to enroll. Federal Employees Health Benefits doesn't mandate the enrollment in that all-expensive Part B if you can handle the copays, deductibles, and coinsurance. That's unique to the federal government from what I've seen. Most private sector firms, even if they have retirement plans or like that, and most defined benefits are gone, but even the military compels enrollment in Medicare when they turn 65, irrespective of what's going on. You got to enroll in A and B or TRICARE will drop you.
And in the military, as well as the law enforcement, then when you go to a law enforcement agency, it's pretty clear that the class is going to be primarily, if not 100% of that age group. But I'm always a little bit surprised that almost every agency you go to have LEOs in it. Now, as a population in a retirement seminar, they're usually not a large percent. So you have to make comments and then say, oh, why don't we talk at the break and
yes.
or at lunch for the special provisions you have. You mention them in front of everyone, but you don't go too deep.
Correct. And it's the same thing with military buyback. I mean, you have a lot of classes where there are two or three people who bought back military service. So dwelling on that, I guess, to the chagrin of people who don't have the military service, although they appreciate the people who do, they feel it's taking away from their time. So what I will often do in situations like that is I'll sidebar with the people who have special circumstances. And I tell them that they're first in line at the break, and it usually works out fine.
Yeah, talking about that at the break, the ones that maybe there's a few younger people in there, and they'll come up, and I said, why are you here? I said, you're actually very smart to do this early. And they go, well, I'm younger than many, but I have this special provision. I'm law enforcement, or I'm this, or I'm that. Some of the real gray hair, which I am, agencies that I go to, and then these other people, they just stick out. And I remember one, more than a few times, rather, they were in their late 20s or 30s. They weren't law enforcement, but they wanted – they say, I don't want to wait like the rest of the people did for 30 years to learn what to do.
Yeah, financial literacy is important from the get-go. Some of the organizations that we're involved in are actually giving classes to people who are, in their first 1 to 5 years, so they can understand all the forms that were thrown at them to begin with and really begin to integrate what those are.
Yeah, I think it's good, too, because if you don't deal with it, it's kind of like, what?
It's true.
If you miss,
it's too late if you wait till the end.
Yeah, the time value of the money put in earlier, but we're getting off our law enforcement.
Yes.
But we can't help saying that. So annuity supplement, I think.
The annuity supplement is immediate. It's not work tested until you hit the FERS minimum retirement age of generally 57. So that means 6-7 years of it is going to be at your disposal without any examination for work income. That's the other thing, too. The supplement does get reduced by income, but it's only work income. know, you'd be getting a pension. You could be pulling money out of TSP. You might have rental property income. You might have investment income. But none of that has any bearing on the reduction to your annuity supplement. It's just work income. And again, for the law enforcement population, for those who retire before the FERS minimum retirement age they would have been in had they not been law enforcement, there's no work earnings reduction to the supplement until they hit that age.
All right, there this is law enforcement. This is not just tax. But if an individual really doesn't want a second career, but they have put money into the thrift and or they have money in an IRA or they can still get the money out earlier without paying a penalty, but they have to base the payments over their remaining life expectancy that, of course, IRS has charts for. Mm-hmm. So there is a way to get a cash flow, even though you might think that you couldn't without paying a penalty.
And these are actually withdrawals as opposed to annuities that you would buy.
Yeah, the annuity, you're buying a ticket on a train. You know, the train has one speed generally and one stop. You're not anxious to get to the stop. Now, the speed can be dictated or provided there could be something in there where you could control where the money sits or is moved to somewhere else. So, there's an ability to manage the money, so to speak. But with regards to the penalty, you have to take out this amount. Mm-hmm. Earlier on, it's not a huge percent, but it does allow somebody that's really tired of working to access those retirement funds without having to pay a penalty.
It's my understanding the Modernization Act now allows you to pull on traditional or pull on Roth, and you don't have to do a pro rata anymore. You know, that doesn't have to be balanced based on your allocation. Is that true?
They used to call that, you're always good with nickel words. It's called mirroring in my eye.
Yes.
And mirroring is basically this. You're standing in front of a mirror and you got your left hand, your right hand. And said, okay, whatever you do with the right hand, you got to do with the left hand. And that drove people nuts. They go, I just want it from here. I could do that in class. And I had a little slide with a mirror and said, okay, what you got? And then, boy, they hated it, but they said, thanks, because I would not have known that otherwise. Andrew says, you're going to be talking to dead air in a second. Bob, thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
And I hope we can do this again.
Absolutely.
I take notes here, mental notes anyway. Andrew, thanks for keeping us on target. And thank you all for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.